Wait, what you waiting on? Check, checkers on your phone. This the Tony Sands Show. Turn your radio on. Kelsey just turned down like a field goal, so we in the zone. Got games like a stadium. I'ma go ahead and pack the dome. I'm cooler, smoother. Make you think with your medulla. You a student, I'ma school you with the facts that I'm producing. This is for the high schoolers, college students. Nah, everyone can do it. Do this, I ain't new to this. My style is rich, it's lucrative. Maneuver through it. You know it's fashion. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. You could catch me every Monday at the kickoff on Sunday. I got these cold hard facts and we ain't talking Sundays. Co-host with Kelly Daly. Shout out to the big homie. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Co-hosting with Kelly Daly. You know it's facts only. You know I'm so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Tony, Tony, Tony. Go BBS Radio.
We're live, BBS Radio. Listen, listen. This is myself, T. Sands. That's Man VC. We are rolling. He rolling with his Ali Bray Denver Broncos on. I'm coming without nothing on because I am pissed off, highly pissed off because of what my Cowboys did on Sunday night. Listen, I came back.
Hold on one second. I don't mean to cut you.
Yeah, you good. Go ahead.
We need to stop the show for a second and pay homage, ladies and gentlemen. Tony Sands, this past weekend was honored in the Ring of Fame for the Kansas University Jayhawks. For all of the people listening and all of the young people listening, please understand we all want to achieve greatness or some form of success. Tony Sands is the antithesis of what a young athlete or an athlete strives to become. It is not about economics or making $400 million. It's about actually leaving a legacy and putting a footprint in the sand. So I just want to say, Tony, you are sensational. My salute to you, my brother, the Ring of Fame, Kansas. As long as Kansas is on planet Earth, you will be there.
Yes, and that's what listen. It was a great weekend, and guys that are listening, it was a great weekend. Like Vaughn said, the highest honor that you can receive when you're dealing with athletics at the collegiate level is to go into the Hall of Fame, the Ring of Honor. You can't get it no higher than that. And one thing happened. This happened back in April. I was, Travis Goff, which is the athletic director, Lance Leipold, which is the head coach presently now. Call me, but I'm gonna take you back a little bit more for those that are listening in and just joining in. I'm gonna take you back through my weekend of what took place in Lawrence, Kansas, and I'm gonna give you a good sneak peek of it. But I met Coach Lance back in early April. He called me. He was down recruiting, and let it be known now with all the things I have done at University of Kansas, outside of the coach that I coached up on. There was only one coach that took the time out of their busy day of recruiting once they came to South Florida to meet with me, and that was Coach Lance Locke. With everything, normally when you make a point to find out, especially with me on the boots on the ground here in South Florida, dealing with the elite athletes that I deal with, you want to make sure that is your number one thing. Let me connect with those alumni that are in that area, especially if I got an alumni that is coaching top-notch talent. I want to make sure that I connect. Coach contacted me. Coach was flying out at about 3 o'clock. Me and him got on the phone about 1 o'clock. Coach said, hey, if I can meet with you, if you're willing to meet and you have the time, I know your schedule's busy, I'll be willing to push my flight back. I'm flying. He was flying private school jet. He said, I will push it back. Now, I understand when you're talking about pushing a jet back, you're pushing back the FCC traveling plans. Everything that costs is a university. So he said, I would push that back if you would meet with me. I said, okay, yeah, I'll meet with you. I said, well, you're leaving out. I'm in Fort Lauderdale. He said, I'm leaving out of Opa-locka Airport, private airport in Miami. If anybody knows about Miami back in the day of the cocaine cowboys, Miami Vice, Opa-locka Airport was one of the drop zones when it came to the drug game in South Florida. But anyway, he pushed it back. I met with him, we had lunch, and we talked about it. I expressed to him how I feel about the University of Kansas, how I have felt about the University of Kansas, and what I think about it, and what I think about him taking the time out of his busy schedule to meet with me. Mind you, after that, a domino effect happened. I went back last year to start a new tradition at the University of Kansas called Raising the Flag. You raise the flags, the jets fly over, and you kick the kickoff at the same time. So I'm the first person to kick that off. So if my grandkids ever go back and they see that tradition, they say, guess what? My grandfather kicked that off. He was the first person to ever raise that flag to start that tradition. And that was cool. And then what happened was, come April, I get a call. My assistant get a call saying, hey, listen, Tony, clear your schedule next Wednesday. They're calling you to induct you into the Hall of Fame. They're going to do a whole big television thing with it. And I said, okay, no problem. So now, mind you, no, as a matter of fact, it was supposed to be Monday. But mind you, we had to push it back because it was basketball season. Our girls' basketball team was still playing. So we said, if we didn't want to interfere with that, we'll push back. I said, yeah, that's fine, because I don't want to interfere with basketball. You know, I wanted it all by myself on that day. Basketball won. We announced it on that Wednesday. They called me and asked me, hey, listen, they went through the spiel. You tell me you did this. I said, yes, I did that. And then they said, we want to offer the invitation to let you know that we're inducting you into the Ring of Honor here at the University of Kansas. Now, you look at some of the greats that have ever played the game that are playing. We have some great ones that went to Gale Sayers, went to the University of Kansas. John Riggins went to the University of Kansas. John Hadle, Chris Harris is already in the Ring of Honor. So we got a lot of guys that's already in a Stucky. These guys are in the league, in the honor, Ring of Honor, playing in the league, so on, so forth, and so forth. So they said, but it's about time that we bring you into the Ring of Honor. I say, yes, I'm delighted. I'm happy. I'm excited. Said we would be doing it this fall, doing a game. So they picked that game. The game was against the University of Central Florida. We played Central Florida. But mind you, and this is how, you know, some people say, well, it's about time. Or they should have did it a long time ago. And this is what I said to a lot of people that came to me. And I say, one thing about time. When the time is right, that's when you want to go in. And I said, this is how this works. I was the number 24th inductee into the hall. But mind you, I wore the number 24 at the University of Kansas. So when you look at that, you said, wow, that's powerful. 24th inductee, 24th to go in. Wow, you couldn't get it no better than that. But then there's more to it. It was better than that. I look at, as they send me my itinerary, because we had a kickoff with the basketball stuff on Friday night as kicking off the whole weekend of events. I look at my itinerary. One of my good buddies is doing the major concert. So I'm looking like, oh, this Flo Rida. Flo doing a concert? Oh, my goodness. South Florida is in this baby strong. So I call, get on the phone with Flo guys, and you know, I tell Flo, hey, listen, Flo, you're doing the kickoff, man, for the summer. I say, you know, I go in there. He said, what? For real? I said, yeah. He said, man, listen, this is what we got to do. When I get there, I'm going to be able to just come to the dressing room, man. We're going to decide what we're going to do. So he said, I was on my way to the dressing room, and then I had to go revert back to my seat because he was getting ready to announce me that I was in the arena. So I had to run back to my seat. Let them do that, and then went to the thing, and me and Flo talked about it. He said, well, I got to bring you on stage. I said, better yet, Flo, let me tell you how you're going to bring me on stage. You're going to bring me on, and I'm going to introduce you to my house. So his son, welcome to my house. I said, listen, it is only fitting that I introduce you to my house. Man, the arena goes crazy. It kicks it off like no other. But people, I'm talking about it, but that doesn't do it any justice. So what I'm going to do is give you a sneak peek behind the scenes of what all took place that weekend. Thomas, you got that video ready? I wanted to go to a university to where I could become one of the greatest guys to ever strap on the cleats at a university. And that's what I set out to do. I wanted my name up in the stadium. I walked out in that stadium plenty of times. Every time I practiced, I looked up at the John Hadles, at the Gale Sayers. I looked at their names and said, I want a piece of that when I leave here. I want to lay a brick at this university. I want to leave a legacy that when I leave here, I want to make sure that everyone knows that I came to this university to set out. The way I came in wouldn't be the way that I go out. I would not go come in a loser and leave out a loser. I'm going to make sure that I galvanize every guy in that locker room to let them understand why they're here and what is the purpose that we are going after. And we was going after to leave out of this university as a winner.
A sweep to the right. He's at the five. He's in. Another Tony Sands touchdown.
Everybody's back this weekend. My teammates. And I tell them all the time. Perez called me and he said, man, you in. And one thing I told him, I said, no, we in. We in. We made it. Our era made it again. You know, we came in when Kansas was, you know, 102 and 101, flip-flopping back and forth to Kansas State. This is going to be the meaning of the world to me because, like I say, my children, 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 children will be able to come back and say, that's my grandfather. My grandfather meant something to this university. And to know that, man, I'm up there with some of the greatest guys ever played this game. It's exciting. To see your name Sands and know that, listen, man, I'm amongst a group of 25 guys. Out of all the guys that have played here at the University of Kansas, I'm in that elite class. I know I can say to myself, I'm blessed. And I thank each and every person that was a part of this, because they go in with me when I go in. Listen, you know, and I talk to young men and I tell them, this is what you set out to be. This is what hard work does.
Well, hard work looks like, right?
That's what it looks like. And understanding, like I said, understanding why you're here and what your purpose is the ultimate goal. Because when I went to, there was only 102 university Division I schools when I went in 1988. And as I said in the clips, my Kansas and Kansas State were flip-flopping 101 and 102 for years. And I wanted, and I said to myself, this will not happen by the time I become a senior. We will separate ourselves from the bottom tier talent. I will etch a stone in this university that would never be matched. When I left the University of Kansas, I left with either holding or tying over 17 rushing records, two NCAA records, a Big Eight Player of the Year, All American, All Big Eight. Listen, like I told you, I had a career that many would dream of. And to be able to even rush for 58 carries, 396 yards, two NCAA records, which one still stands to this day, and that's the carries, to be in even another elite class of single game rushing record holders. Myself, Marshall Faulk, LaDainian Tomlinson, P. Ryan, Melvin Gordon, to be in even in that top tier class speaks volumes. And this weekend, as some of the guys even said to me, this was the best induction ceremony that we've ever seen. They went all out for this. He said, just to
deserve it, brother. You deserve it.
And listen.
My point is, my brother, you deserve this. You understand?
Listen.
Like, we got time to talk about Broncos, Cowboys, this, that. The bottom line is, sensational, baby. And at the end of the day, listen, bro, you, I think what's important now is commitment, dedication,
yes,
integrity. Okay. These things are important. I think our young athletes in any sport, doesn't have to be football. In any sport, you can apply this to soccer, tennis, anything you're doing. If you want to put a monetary number behind your level of success, then you haven't really gauged who you are as a person and as an athlete. Okay.
Correct.
And Tony Sands didn't have to make it to the NFL and go to 9 Pro Bowls to be acknowledged in the history of this game. So for the people listening out there, dedication, commitment, and integrity is just part of what Tony stands for. And man, brother, you deserve it, bro.
And that's, you know, and you know, to say to yourself, you know, it was like, man, I just couldn't ask for a better weekend. And to also be able to share it with my family. A lot of people saw my family and my friends that were on the field. It was a lot. I mean, it was, I just was overwhelmed with it. And then, like I say, to be able to introduce Flo Rida on his song of
the crowd go wild.
And the crowd goes,
yo, crowd goes wild. Hey, listen, man, one of the most beautiful things that a person can have in life is be appreciated for their talents or their attributes, right? And then, and then you actually walk out in front of a different generation of people who were not at the school at the time you were there. And they say, yo, this dude is the real deal. We got to salute this, bro. You know what I mean?
Listen, you galvanize a whole different generation. Like I said, the kids that are there now, I play them. Their parents were young. Because I got some of them said, hey, man, I was about 10 years old when you set the record. You know, I was with my parents. So now their parents already know. They know. But now I was able to galvanize a whole other generation. Even going on the stage with Flo Rida bought them to a whole nother level of respecting who I was. You could see it. And from the time you walk in the arena, it's went crazy because they realized my family had all the shirts on. They had two different shirts. There was a shirt for Friday night and a shirt for Saturday. So when we in the arena and they see everybody's, you know, we didn't have to move from our seat, man. If my mom, my wife, anybody wanted something, they were making sure that it came. So people start recognizing. Then a couple people come, hey, can I take a picture with you? So, you know, once that starts, everybody in that area starts wondering, So, you know, my son-in-law them, you know, they never had this experience. So they never had seen me at that level. They understand.
Different.
A dude taps him on the shoulder saying, that's Tony Sam. He said, yeah. He said, oh, you got to be kidding me. So my son-in-law is looking like, darn, it's like that. You know, so he said, man, that guy back there trying to, I said, yeah, it's probably going to get worse as we start sitting there getting, and they announce it, man. So like I said, the weekend was a blast. I hope every kid that is seeking to play this game at some point reach that pinnacle, because the one thing about that, and we know with athletes, as I said, the University of Kansas, there's only 25 guys that's in the Ring of Honor. Mind you, and this is the part that I talked about also, I said, it was a blessing to be able to receive this while I was alive.
Right.
People tend to get, once you die, then that's when your fame even shoots up more. So they give you your honor to someone else within your family. But I was able to receive this honor myself with my family to enjoy it like I wanted to enjoy it. I dreamed of it from the time they announced it to April, how it would be on that day. And it was just as I expected. It was a delight. It was what you would call every kid. And understand what went into it. Like I tell people, when I was in college, I was a father. I was a student. I was an athlete. And I was a husband. And I was a community person. So I had to juggle all five of those hats and put them all in perspective in order to reach this pinnacle. I remember my college teachers. I mentioned them in my speech, down to the trainers, down to three of my guys that are not here today. I requested the university to make sure that someone from their family represents them, because they were teammates. And when I spoke about it and I stated, you know, this goes out to Hesley Hempstead, Keith Loniker, those guys, and I named those names, Roger Robin, who was my fullback, these guys that have passed on is not here, but these guys belong to be here to see this. I know they would love to have seen. And everybody, Keith Loniker is the guy. I don't know if you ever seen the movie Lakeview Terrace. You ever seen with Samuel Jackson and the neighbor that was next? Samuel was a police officer, and it was a neighbor that moved next, the neighbors moved next door to him, and there was a black and white couple, and Samuel didn't like it, so he hired this big old bodyguard to do away with him. Well, that big old bodyguard was Keith Arnica, was one of my offensive linemen in school, so I had to mention him, man. So it's been, like I say, it's been a great weekend, been a blast. It ain't, now listen, and I'm going to tell you, I flew home Sunday.
Right.
And, you know, my wife is a Dolphin fan, so you know, the biggest thing, she was, you know, they was, everybody was waiting till the Cowboys play the 49ers. And listen, I get a call saying, one of my friends said, you better turn off your notifications tonight, buddy, because it's going to be a long night. That phone's going to be dinging and dinging. I'm so tired. You know, I'm tired. I fall asleep. I fall asleep, but I hear one of my wife tonight. Oh, he over there acting like he's asleep. I know he hit that phone just a day.
The Cowboys losing, so he acting like he's asleep.
Hey, look. So I wake up the next morning, I look at Facebook, and she got on there. Yeah, he acting like Tony can't answer no calls, no phones, no texts. He over there acting like he's asleep. Listen, so by 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up to look at SportsCenter, the NFL Network, and I'm looking like, my phone full of dings. They still ding. So I'm like, what the heck? I looked at the previews. I'm like, you got to be kidding. This cannot be happening. We cannot be putting on this display of football when it comes to football. And that, with that being said, guys, listen. Man, we talk about that. Dak Prescott took a beating.
Big beating.
He took a beating far as his PR. But V, do we blame all this on Dak Prescott with the performance that the Dallas Cowboys put out? Can we blame that on?
First and foremost, I think we're going to have to. Here's why. I think the Dallas Cowboys are in a unique situation right now. You have an old regime of the guys who came along with Dak and Ezekiel Elliott guys.
Yes.
That's their core of guys. They don't really relate to the Micah Parsons, Trayvon Diggs. This is a whole new crew of guys, right?
Correct.
So I think the problem that Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys are going to have currently is Dak is going to have to keep performing. He's going to have to perform. Micah Parsons and these guys in that defense and the other players on the team, CeeDee Lamb, they want to win. They have no excuses, and they got no time for Dak Prescott trying to figure this thing out.
Correct.
Dak Prescott has a winning record, as we know. He's about 19 to 19 games over 500. But everybody knows that Dak Prescott's going to be a free agent next year, and I do not think, unfortunately, he is worth the amount of money that's going to be required to pay for Dak Prescott. Now, we can't put it all on him, but I will have to say, unfortunately, he's just not an elite quarterback in my eyes.
And a lot of people saying, okay, he is not in that elite class. He's in that second class of quarterbacks. But when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, have that made him be in that elite class because the Dallas Cowboys and the mystique that the Dallas Cowboys quarterbacks has, that it automatically launches you in an era, in an area that you really not ready for, or that you really should not have. If you was on any other team, what could it possibly be like a Justin Fields in Chicago if you was in Chicago? Or
good point, because look, the history of the Cowboys, Tony, that you to make your point, the history of the Cowboys has been Danny White type of guy who got more props and hype when he didn't deserve it, right?
That's
the history of the Cowboys. If you come in as a quarterback of the Cowboys, you automatically get like leveled up to like level 8.
as we can see this week, not only did Dak Prescott took some jabs at CeeDee Lamb. There's been, you know, jabs at CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb has gone back and forth in the media because some people are saying that he's not a number one quarterback receiver. They say
CeeDee Lamb, in my book, has earned his money. He's earned his pedigree and his old thing. I mean, I don't have it right in front of me, but CeeDee Lamb has missed less than 5 games in his NFL career, ladies and gentlemen.
Of course. Okay? Of course.
This guy is durable. He runs accurate routes. He's in the spot where he's supposed to be. His hand ball placement is outstanding. He can run multiple levels of a route. In comparison to a guy that wears this hat that I like to wear, which is Jerry Jeudy, who we'll get on in a second. Same draft.
Yes.
Statistics are astronomically in different places. So if we're going to start blaming CeeDee Lamb for something, then we need to start blaming people like Jerry Jeudy for something realistically. Because this guy, CeeDee Lamb, has actually performed consistently week to week. Jerry Jeudy has not. So I wouldn't blame CeeDee Lamb. I like CeeDee.
And as I said, CeeDee, like I said, they CeeDee Lamb went back and forth and with one of the commentators, hey, listen, that said he's not a number one guy. He does not play like a number one guy. But I had an opportunity, and this is what I wanted to do to make sure that everyone within the Dallas Cowboy organization own up to their end of it. I got a breakdown of the play of some of Dak Prescott's plays. And what I mean by that is that receivers got to be careful that they're not breaking routes too early. Or the same receivers are not breaking the routes at the same level of the field, which does not put any pressure at a linebacker. Thomas, can we play that first soundbite? We're going to listen to Mike Martz break down the situation with the Dallas Cowboys and how this situation can be really rectified and they can get back on track because they're trying to be compete with the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC East. They got to get a lot of this stuff rectified. Thomas, we have that soundbite ready.
So Dak Prescott over the last season, 22, led the league with interceptions. And, you know, I know Dak. I've been down to camp to see him several years ago, and I'm a big fan of his, I guess. But went back and looked at those throws, and it's pretty interesting. I want to show you these, and we'll talk about it afterwards. But there's a lot of factors here that might surprise you. Some of these interceptions are just hard to understand. And you look at this in terms of the receivers. On this play, you're going to get pressure off the slot, which means you got man-to-man on the outside. And so if you just hold it right there real quick, right there, stop it. And the slot receiver, the quarterback, Dak is going to try and get him on a crossing route, but the inside defender popping out of there is going to pick him up. So he gets doubled in essence. He sees it, and he's going to try and go to an outside receiver, stop it right there on a comeback over to the left side. So, you know, there's two ways of looking at this. And one of the things I think the easiest way is if you see you get pressured or blitzed, you throw the easiest route, which is one of the comebacks on the outside, and not waste time on the inside thing. But that's just a philosophy thing. So he's a little bit late throwing this on the outside. But these receivers on these routes, when you hit a comeback, you cannot slide out to the boundary. You're giving the quarterback up. That ball is thrown right now, and the corner breaks on it better than the receiver does. The receiver down here at the bottom.
We'll come back to that same spot. I want to come back to that same play. And that's what – and see, that's what I'm talking about. When you look at that and you're looking at a quarterback that's back there, is it all this? And see, a lot of people in the stands and fans don't get a chance to see that. All they see is the interception get thrown, and all of a sudden now it's going back for a pick six. And the only person that it looks like it is, it's like it's a quarterback. I mean,
that's the big thing, Tony. A lot of times when we're watching the game on television, we aren't able to see that actual angle right there. And a lot of times quarterbacks get thrown under the bus for scenarios like that. Right. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's Michael Gallup on that play?
Yes.
Okay. Michael Gallup, in my opinion, has regressed as a wide receiver.
And I think, see, he hasn't been to Michael Gallup since the injury.
He hasn't been the same guy. And for some reason, you know, maybe Gallup needs to go inside, Tony, to the slot. Because now, what he just did on the outside is just unacceptable by a wide receiver at a professional level running that specific route. That cannot happen under any circumstances. But with that being said, Dak Prescott has made some poor decisions. And I don't know, Tone. I think that he was a good quarterback a few years ago. It was good. But I think that we've gotten into a new era of quarterback of Justin Herbert's, Hurts, Burrows. Now, these guys are just a different group of guys.
Correct. I mean, when you look at it, and mind you, I got my guy, Coach Franklin, you're here. He's one of my quarterback guys. He's the one, as a matter of fact, now, this who coached Bozeman.
Okay, perfect.
I went and got the guru of the guru.
The guru
is in the building. Coach Keith Franklin joining us. Breakdown quarterback with Dak Prescott. What's going on, my brother?
What's up, my brother? How everybody doing tonight? Everything's good.
Yeah, man, we're enjoying. We're breaking football down. We had Bozeman on early in the year because we was talking about Justin Fields, and I'd say, let me get on the guy. that taught Bozeman how to be Bozeman and taught him what all he knows. So I had to bring Coach Franklin on. Frank, listen, we're talking about, we're in the mixed up. For those that are joining the Tony Sands Show, it is me, Tony Sands, my man BC, and we have our special guest of the week on breaking down quarterbacks. Because Keith, when we look at the performance of the Dallas Cowboys last week,
right,
a lot of people have been giving Dak Prescott a lot of flack. But I, as a matter of fact, they've been giving Dak a lot of flack. But I'm gonna play another piece of this soundbite that we have where Mike March is breaking down Dak Prescott. Then I'm gonna come back to you and you give me your analysis as a quarterback, because you did play the quarterback position. So, Thomas, can you play that soundbite for me, please?
You can see him sit on it right there. Ball bounces off, and they end up with a pick. So by play design, it's not good. Stop it right there. He's going to win on the route. He has to come back and look at the slant here to the left, even though he's not going to throw it. And those eyes will keep him from collapsing like he's doing. And Dak just comes back and stares that thing down. Now, maybe they tell him to do that. I don't know. But clearly, that's not what you want. And by the way, the receiver down here on the slant route, he just took off. He broke the slant off and took off up the field, which had he thrown the slant, that would have been a pick. So they're just kind of doing whatever they want, I think, sometimes at wide receiver, which is pretty hard to understand. But
we're going to come right back to that. Well, if you're coach, you coaching, and I'm going to put you as Dak Prescott's quarterback coach at this time.
Right.
And Dak is taking this heat. How do you alleviate this situation when you look back at the film and you're seeing receivers pretty much freelance?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, you know, the quarterback position is a position that everybody got eyes on, win, lose, or draw. And the one thing I do like, and matter of fact, I love about Dak, Dak will always take ownership, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's one of the biggest things that you know, as a quarterback, I look at it, but that leadership, because you know, the thing that hurts the quarterback, for example, is, you know, when they make the great plays, you know, it's all on, you know, a great call sometimes and this and that. But a lot of times the receivers, and that's why timing with practice off the field, you know, not just to practice with all 11 guys on the field, they got to get that good bond. They got to get that great bond back. You know, when Dak had Amari Cooper, you could tell, man, he had a rapport with those guys. And what people are failing to realize right now with Dallas, if you go all the way back to one of the greatest Cowboys, you know, and I'm a little favorite with it, you know, my boy, you know, my uncle Michael Irvin, he also had a tight end. And that's what people fail to realize, a lot of pressure right now. Nobody knows Dallas tight end right now. And that was always – you know, and when you have Mike, had those great receivers out there, but, you know, Troy always had that guy. Everybody know who his tight end was. Who's Zach's tight end? You know, you look at right now, Patrick Mahomes. Look at Travis Kelce. You know, they got rid of, you know, Tyreek Hill, but guess what? Kelce runs that offense. Because you know why? Those guys, man, Patrick Mahomes could close his eyes and he knew where Travis at. Dak doesn't have that with those guys, man. And that's the part that hurts Dak right now. But the thing that, like I said, I love about him, he always take ownership. Those guys, man, you know, they've got to get a good bond. They got a great team. You know what I'm saying? You know, they got the defense. And I think right now, Dak needs to just go out there. And I would tell Dak, man, look, go out there and have fun. Because there's too much of, sometimes you can overcoach a guy. You know, and I think right now it's a little too much overcoaching. I think right now, let Dak go out there and just be himself. Because think about it now, Dak been playing since a rookie. You know what I'm saying? He's been doing good, but now all of a sudden everybody want to point fingers. You know what I'm saying? A guy run a wrong route, it's on Dak. But the guy ran the wrong route. The guy bobbles the ball, pick, it's a pick. That's on Dak. But if the guy bobbles the ball, you know what I'm saying? So that's what, you know, that's the part that's hurting us right now with Dak, man. And like I said, I love the kid, man. I really do. You know, you put Dak in that office with San Francisco, and again, I'm not knocking McCarthy, but look how they protect Brock Purdy right now. You know what I'm saying? Look how they protect Burroughs right there in Cincinnati. You know why? He has his money receivers with him. You know?
Yes.
Look at all these look at Tua down here in Miami. Man, he got weapons around it. Does Dak have that?
And they're
Let me ask you guys a question, though. If Mike McCarthy is the coach with the Super Bowl ring in his pocket and has been given the ability to take this team to where Jerry Jones and the Cowboy fans need him to take them, which is to the Super Bowl, how is he allowing wide receivers to freelance and run these freelance routes, so to speak, when he was so strategic when he was in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers with timing, system, and a player being in a specific spot? Why do you think that Mike McCarthy is allowing – this is his offense. This is Mike McCarthy, a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I mean, coach, I mean, we could put as much as we want on Dak and the wide receivers. But at some point, I think that's going to come back to that coach, right?
Yes. Because you go – when you break down this film, and they said that Mike McCarthy, since they lost to San Francisco, hasn't left the office because he's saying he's got to get this – corrected. He's got to get it rectified because he can't put that same display of football out on the field again this weekend.
Right.
Because if he put that same stuff out on the field again this weekend, I think he understands what his time span is of being a
Cowboy. Yeah, his job is on the line. Oh, yeah, his job is definitely on the line. He knows that.
100%. 100%. And what I know for Super Bowl. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm just going to say it's just mind-boggling to me to see a Super Bowl head coach not being able to organize and letting wide receivers freelance. This is some odd stuff going on right now.
But when we talk about this, and you said a mouthful, LB, but when we talk about it, has this day and age game of the game, have it left Mike McCarthy? Because we're seeing that play out, I think, in New England to where now, this is a different, is it a, it's possibly is a young coach's game right now with the way the those offenses are being played. Now, you look at the way San Francisco, Sean Hartman, are playing. These are more young, innovative guys with new ideas. If Mike McCarthy may be an old guy and stuck in his ways to where, guess what? This worked for me back then, it's going to work now. And now you got different types of guys playing the game. They're faster,
they're bigger. It's under the same thing as Mike McCarthy and Bill Belichick. All these guys have Super Bowl rings, and all of these guys are getting outcoached in the second half of football games.
Yes, and it segue me back into this. How long, guys, do New England and Belichick stay together? Because we're seeing this thing is unraveling in New England. Belichick, I did a lot of great things for New England. But how long do Robert Kraft continue to say what you did in the past is okay for the future?
It just goes to show, you know, and much, you know, people forget that Belichick was in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, before he went to New England. But watch this. Who was his quarterback? You don't know. And what I'm trying to say is, if you look behind all those great coaches, those great Hall of Fame coaches, they had what? Hall of Fame quarterback. You see what I'm saying? It's like, if you have that quarterback, a la Tom Brady. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And now, how great is Bill Belichick now? There's no more Tom. You see what I'm saying? Tom left Bill and won him another Super Bowl.
And then you throw in the mix. You throw in the mix that he's not, there's reports out of the Boston Globe and in New England that he's not fond of Mac Jones and he wanted to go with somebody else, and Robert Kraft wanted him to keep Mac Jones.
Exactly. So now,
here we go.
Now we got a head coach and an owner going at it.
And an owner.
That's right.
Well, we never had this. They've never been through this. They've never been through this type of owner saying one thing, head coach saying another. It was always being that you're cooking, you can shop for the groceries.
Look, you had who bringing that bottle away, running it off? It's Tom Brady.
Yes.
Also, to add on to what you're saying, listen, Josh McDaniels, I think, is a terrible head coach.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely.
Right? a terrible coach. Yes. However, I think we all can agree, though, that from an offense perspective, he's got a pretty good mind from an offensive coordinator perspective.
Yep. I agree on that. Absolutely.
Right? And And without Mac Jones, ever since that Josh McDaniels left, Mac Jones has not looked like himself.
Correct. At all. And there you go again. How much do the marriage between coordinator and player go hand in hand? Especially if you got a young guy. You got a guy like Tom Brady. Tom Brady was a quarterback and offensive coordinator all in one. He had that if about him to be able to do that.
Right.
We're seeing that play out also in Pittsburgh. We're seeing it play out in, you know, we've seen this is starting to play out in different places that are required. Even if you look at now, and I didn't think it would happen this soon, but I think it might happen. If you look at Pittsburgh, they're talking about John Gruden possibly being the number one spot to take over for Mac. John Gruden back in coaching that soon.
Well, here's what I'll say to everybody about this. Something that's interesting. You mentioned the Dallas Cowboys' great era. Jay Novacek was not the most athletic tight end.
Exactly.
However, to speak into the volumes of what we're all saying, this game was not about speed. This game was about timing and a cerebral game.
Right? Exactly.
Sort of like Peyton Manning had with Dallas Clark.
Yes. There you go.
Another dude. This guy was not fast. Todd Christensen from the Oakland Raiders. Another dude. Yep. Jim Plunkett, Todd Christensen, right? What I think was happening is that, and you guys would know this better than me, what I think was happening is that era of football, it was about timing, but being in a specific spot and working those patterns and having cohesion with the quarterback and the offense and the wide receiver, and everybody had to move at the same time, and it was like perfect cohesion, right? Now it's kind of like the line does this thing. Running backs, you guys are doing this thing. And then you can have wide receivers freelancing on routes.
Especially in this new spread, and that new spread, this new spread system that they're running now.
That's right.
You get to a spot.
Right.
They're not saying precise spot. Just get to an open area.
And that's why I think Brock Purdy is killing people right now, because Brock Purdy does not have the strongest arm, and his average down the field is not more than 17 yards per pass play. But what he's doing is he's throwing the ball to a specific spot on an angle, and the guy knows I got to be at this spot at that time.
At that time.
Right? So when my back foot drops to five steps, Debo's cutting across, ball got to be out. It's like, you know what I mean?
Got to be going.
And who's Brock Purdy tight end?
Kittle, who's nasty.
There you go. You see what I'm saying? I'm telling you, the one position that people are dogging out, and
the tight end.
Don't understand, and there you go. And you just said it earlier. The man, you don't have to be the fastest. Kelton's not the fastest. He knows how to get open. Look at Gronk. He wasn't the fastest. He knew how to get open.
Right. Yes. Keith Jackson was another guy.
These guys.
Now you had exceptions with those Shannon Sharps. Now Shannon was.
Right. Now he was fast. Sharp move, bro.
He was that new.
But then again, that helped out who? John Elway. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Jimmy Graham wasn't fast. He was just a big, tall guy that just didn't get to
anybody. There you go. Right now, I'm looking for me a tight end to help Dak out. I don't care what anybody say. Or give me that back out the back that can catch that rock. You know what I'm saying? I like Emmitt Smith. You know what I'm saying? Give me some of those players. You know?
Back in the day, what you're saying is they used to call the tight end the butt.
Yeah,
and they used to say when the quarterback go through his progressions, hey man, if it ain't open, hit the button.
Yeah, there you go.
That ain't always open.
Go to your check down. Where's your check down? Where's your money at? See, everybody want to go like Tony's saying. You in that spread office? Everybody want to go down the field fast. No, why was Joe Montana good? He nickel and dimed you. Even Steve Young. That was West Coast. The spread office been around for a while. But it's always. Even with Troy and them, you had Harper them on the outside. But who was down? Who was controlling everything? Jay.
Novacek.
Yep.
You better believe it.
Yep.
Better believe it. Same thing with the New York Giants with Mark Navarro.
Mark Navarro
was the slowest man on the planet. He was always in that end zone open.
getting it open. Hey, and as guys, listen, as you say, gotta get open, and guys has gotta get open. Leads me to what is going on in Denver. It ain't even cold in Denver, but it's getting colder toward the deadline. Oh, yeah. We got some
I'm
bags.
Make it real easy for you. I'm going to make it real easy for you. It's the same. Listen, when you got Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton, professional wide receivers, not running hard on routes. Not running hard. Unacceptable. When we rewind the tape or we watch this and guys not running routes, guys not running the route precision properly, not blocking on running plays. It is unacceptable. These young guys have gotten nice salaries. They all walking around with this nice jewelry and these cars.
There you go.
Right? An old saying they used to say back in the day was, when you get paid, the money holds the pockets, Danny. You can't run
as fast.
Can't run as fast.
So what's happening, guys, is the young guys on my team, they feeling themselves, and they think that this cut and this stuff ain't real.
They're
going to learn that the NFL stands for not for long.
Same location if you're not getting it on. Now, let's break down the trade deadline for the Denver Broncos, because it is the one team that everybody's talking about when it's coming, getting closer to the trade deadline. A lot of names are being thrown out. The biggest name that's being thrown out, but I don't know if this is going to be a factor, but the biggest name that's being thrown out has the most value. If you're looking to reboot this team, and we're looking to get what we can get, who has the most value to that team?
Let me give you guys a different scenario though.
What?
Generational talent you do not give away, first and foremost. No. This is a generational talent. This guy is better than Sauce Gardner. I'm not going to find another one of these. Last time I seen one was Champ Bailey.
Correct.
Last time I saw him was Champ Bailey. He was a Hall of Famer. All right? I'm not giving this guy away. Justin Simmons, a safety, has not proven himself and has not excelled. Courtland Sutton has regressed after the ACL injury.
Yes.
Jerry Jeudy was a bad pick for us. We could have took CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk, or Justin Jefferson, the real JJ, not Jerry Jeudy. All right? So the real JJ is Justin Jefferson, and we passed this guy. So I hate to say it, guys. I like Jerry Jeudy, but T, when we compare Jerry Jeudy to your boy CeeDee Lamb, unfortunately, my boy has never shown up. CeeDee Lamb, in my opinion, I don't even think he's missed three games. I said earlier five. I'm looking at it. I don't think CeeDee Lamb has missed a game. And if he did, he missed one game, if anything. Jerry Judy's just not durable enough. The Russell Wilson trade was bad, and I'll end it on this. The best way to get compensation is Courtland Sutton, Frank Clark, Jerry Judy, Justin.
Okay. Well, they got Frank. Frank is just going to get released or traded. It just came out today.
We made Frank give back $1.679 million today. His salary is $821 million, so that we can move him in a trade. That is good business.
Yeah, but now, listen, okay, if you're overhauling the team, and right now, technically the way the Broncos sound, like they've given up on this year. If I've given up on this year, and I'm saying to myself, where can I get more bang for my buck to turn this thing around? What can I do to really just shake this thing up and to get more value? Because I want to get more picks in the draft. You're not going to get the third pick in the draft.
But here's the thing. If I trade Justin Simmons, Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton, and I trade the second pick in the draft and slide back some, I'll have some picks and I can still keep my star corner. Listen, man, Patrick Surtain, I hate to say it, I know everybody in the league wants this boy, but this guy's better than Sauce Gardner.
You don't think they're getting calls? And they're entertaining calls about Patrick Surtain. I'm telling you, he's the one guy
you don't take the call
for. He's your Michael Jordan.
Yes, because listen, the one thing you got to understand, Tony, is he's always been prepared. He's always done his assignment. Yes. He's always conditioned. He always takes the best wide receiver. I want to build a team of guys like him.
But you got to remember, we always talk about blockbuster trades. Back when Dallas had Herschel Walker, everybody thought that Herschel Walker would not be traded. When the new coach came in as the Broncos has a new coach. Jimmy looked at how can I get the most value to turn my team around ASAP. I got to go get the biggest.
Are y'all going to give me 3-1s for Patrick Surtain?
He's out there. You get a team to help. You get a team. I guarantee you.
3-1s?
I don't know if they're going to give up 3-1s for
him. That's but the asking price, though.
But I'm telling you, just look at, you know what new coaches do when they come in.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though, guys. I got a lot of young guys. I got this Mims kid out of Oklahoma that we like. All right? We're developing young talent on the team. Nick Benito from Oklahoma. Nick, we got a young talented team coming up with guys that are actually hungry. Greg Dulcich, the tight end out of UCLA, who's been hurt a lot. He's finally coming back tonight. I think what's going to start to happen is you're going to see the old guys go to the bench. Sutton is not even starting most of the time now, okay? So what's going to happen is I think you're going to see these guys are going to be on display tonight, and we're going to start to get rid of Justin Simmons, Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton. We'll trade Frank for a 6th-round pick just to get him out of here, and I think that the Broncos will then go into the draft with a stockpile of picks and cut Russell Wilson, slide back on the 2-pick, and then now we'll start the Denver Broncos situation.
But
right now,
cut Russell? They're going to let their money go like that?
Oh, you have no choice but to cut Russell Wilson at the end of this season. I mean, Russell Wilson is demoralizing. You know, he is regressing. I understand that he played decent in his first 2 games.
Are you going to take the place they cut on Russ?
I mean,
what's the cap number? Yeah, what's the cap number?
We'll spread it out over multiple years. I'll be a capologist, and I'll spread it out for 2 to 3 years for the max number of years that I can spread it. That man has got to go. He looked scared last week when the Jets was coming after him. He was over there like, yo, my man, I need you to stand in there and throw that ball.
I think they're trading. They're trading to the Giants. That's where he wanted to go.
You think somebody going to take that salary?
Yeah, I'll take Russell. I'll take Russell Wilson over Daniel Jones, absolutely.
My man, I will tell you something. I'm from New York. I'll drive Daniel Jones. I'll drive to Colorado tonight. Pick Russ up and drive him back to Brooklyn tomorrow, where I live at. I would kindly take him to Brooklyn. Russ, you want to go to Brooklyn? Oh, God.
Listen, we got 2 minutes of the show left. Frank, man, listen, I know you guys, and give me a quick thing, because I know you guys are getting ready to head to Bethune-Cookman's homecoming. What takes you guys to Bethune-Cookman homecoming? Let the audience know that the company and what you guys are doing with it. Give me a quick minute on that right quick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, my wife and I, she's an alumni of Bethune-Cookman. She's a lawyer, a former lawyer, retired lawyer. And right now, we've just started our new company. It's KRF Sports and Entertainment Consulting Company. So, we're talking with kids about just the game of life, talking about NIL deals, about financial agreements, about protecting your brand, about honoring your brand, about respecting your brand, whether it's in the workforce with a Fortune 500 company, or you want to make that deal, as you and I were talking today, Tony, we have a young man right now at Bethune, at FAMU right now. He just got a deal with Krispy Kreme Donut, you know? So now we want to get kids like him and say, now you have this deal, but man, you got this money coming in. How are you going to protect yourself? You know, now you got to change the way you walk, the way you talk when you're around. So that's what our company's doing right now. We're about protecting these kids right now. Our kids in high school, you know, getting these NIL deals, touching all this money right now. You know, we got schools now giving our cars. You know, so we're trying to protect those kids from the danger that's out there right now. So again, our company is KRF Sports and Entertainment Consultants. And so look for us. We're going to be a big hit, man.
I'm going to bring you back on, Coach, so you can explain it in more detail. We're going to have a whole special dealing with that, because as the coaching thing starts going on, you can start enlightening parents and my guests that are listening to it. Guys, listen, we got to close out. My producer says time to go, and I got to let you know it's time to go. Me and V signing off till we see you next Thursday. Let's go, Cowboys.
Let's go, Broncos, with an upset. I ain't beat these teams since Peyton Manning was my quarterback. I need to win.
Let's go. Yes. Let's go. We're closing out the show.